Hello
Hey,
there.
Jay. Hey,
How's
what's
it
up?
going?
Oh, all right. Where you at?
I'm doing all right. I think all things considered, I live here in Missoula, Montana, where the football team, the college football team, the Montana Grizzlies are kind of a local obsession, and they just won a big quarterfinal or semifinal tournament game. So, the whole town is abuzz.
Well, that's not quite the same here because, of course, the Saints just experienced a heartbreaking defeat at Soldier Field in Chicago. So,
Yeah. Well, my next door neighbor is a Chicago Bears fan, so
oh, please.
I'm very sorry for you.
That's disgusting, but I'm ready to have a nightcap. What about you?
Oh, I think that's a dandy idea.
All right. So, I thought since I've become convinced that we can't really trust your stewardship as a bartender, that perhaps I should try to guide us through making a Manhattan.
Well, I think that that's fine.
Well, great. Then you'll mix along with me then.
Well, I'll try to keep up, Yeah.
Okay, good. Because I got my mixer. I've got my bucket of ice here,
Okay.
and I'm filling up my little cocktail shaker, I should say, with some of this ice.
Yeah, I've got some of that too, right there.
Of course, up there in the Great White North, you probably just reach out the window and grab some.
Yeah. I just scrape it off the top of my head, actually.
That would give it an extra special flavor.
Exactly.
All right, so then I put in two measures. I don't know exactly what these are, really, but of a fine bourbon that I have here, Buffalo Trace. I still have some of this Buffalo Trace that a friend gave me.
Oh yeah, that's good
So
stuff.
anyway, yeah.
I'm kind of going along the same, although I'm stuck with the Evan Williams, which is kind of a they claim to be Kentucky's first distiller, at least on their label, and yet you wouldn't know it from
Yeah.
the flavor.
Well, yes, I've consumed my share of Evan Williams in my time. All right, so dump that in there, and then a little sweet vermouth.
Oh yeah.
Now, I just kind of put a little bit, maybe a quarter measure in there.
Yeah, that's smart. We had some sweet vermouth at one point, but I used it for cooking. It's a really good thing for cooking.
Oh,
And so
really?
all I'm left with actually is some Martini and Rossi extra dry vermouth.
Oh.
But I'm sure that that'll be pretty much the same.
Well, not really, but there's a name for that. I forget what it is.
Maybe I should double it
No,
if it's
no, no.
dry.
With the dry, I would use none.
Oh, well,
Yeah.
I just added some.
Anyway. And then a couple dashes of Angostura bitters.
I last week, you flaunted this bitters thing with me and seemed disappointed that I opted to substitute some some other heinous shit. But what's funny is that I was digging around looking to see what else I had in the liquor cabinet this week, and lo and behold, there was some bitters, although it's actually Peychaud's bitters, or however you
Oh,
pronounce it.
yeah, okay. Peychaud's bitters. Well, that'll give you a little flavor of New Orleans
Yeah,
up
exactly.
in Montana.
Yeah.
Although it's got a very distinctly different flavor.
And color as well.
Yeah. I like to call that a New Orleans Manhattan.
Right on.
But yeah, anyway, so that's it. Then I'm gonna shake this thing up.
Right on. Well, it sounds like you must have an actual shaker. See, all I have is a glass, so I'll just kind of swish it around a little bit and try not to splash it everywhere.
How are you going to strain it properly?
Oh, I'm not.
Ah.
I don't have a strainer.
Well, that is a shame.
Yeah.
I find that hard to believe because I know that I've seen video footage of you using a shaker before
Well, I
I
mean,
have.
it's not within arm's reach is the thing.
Yes. Well, yes. No, well, I can see that once again, you are your commitment to the craft of mixology is unparalleled. And then finally, I'm putting in a maraschino cherry.
Yeah, you know, we didn't have any of those, but I Dylan had some pickles, so I thought I'd put a pickle in there. So I'll unscrew the lid and dip in there and get one of these. Dylan makes these pickles. They're really delicious.
Yeah, I've had some, and they are delicious. But I can't say I really recommend, or I'm not sure I even believe that you're actually doing that.
Oh, well, here, I'll give you a little sound effect as I drop it in. Here you go. Did you hear that?
I did, but that could
have
been
that. That was the plummetous sound of a pickle diving, as it were, into my my drink. And there it sits like a kind of large green turd.
I couldn't really remember if you typically put a cherry in a Manhattan or not. But
I think you do. I actually looked up the recipe online.
Get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
You did?
I did look it up. I mean, I care enough to know what I'm failing to do.
Was it a slow day at work or something?
No, I never have those. It was, a couple hours ago, we were trying to, get the baby to settle down, and I thought, what better way than to, sit him in my lap and show him mixed drink recipes.
Yes.
He was fascinated.
It's really never too early to start with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
How is
so
your
we
drink?
Should raise a toast, probably, because I'm already drinking.
Yes, well, a toast to Betty Page.
Ooh, yeah, she passed away, didn't she?
Yeah, I just got the news. I can't believe it. I'm
shocked.
It's
terrible. Yeah, I'm shocked she was still alive, but I'm also shocked that she died.
That's exactly how I feel.
Yeah. So, well,
anyway,
here's to her.
Well, mm-hmm.
Yeah, she was a fine person, it seemed like. So, knew nothing about her, but, except that she was in pictures.
And she was a born-again Christian. I mean, she became born again later.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. You know what? It's always more convenient to get morals after you make money.
Yeah. She was still raking it in, apparently. But, although some of that stuff, it's hard to believe that she was even getting royalties from so much Betty Page stuff out there.
Yeah.
But, hey, how's your drink taste?
Well, here, I better taste it. So, cheers. Wow, it's actually surprisingly smooth. It has kind of a, some kind of an unmistakable vinegary flavor to it. Those bitters are good.
Yeah, how's the Evan Williams holding up?
It's, actually between the dry vermouth and the bitters, I think the kind of sharp smack to the face that you normally get from, high proof, low quality bourbon is kind of mitigated.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Bad booze can do good things.
Exactly.
The, this is kind of my fallback cocktail that I like to make. In fact, I'm known in certain circles here in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
I'm known and feared for my Manhattan because I mix them so good, so tasty.
Uh huh.
You might actually have too many.
Yeah, and thereby fall back.
Although you can't really say that I mix a strong Manhattan, because if you mix a Manhattan, right, it's all booze.
Yeah.
There's no strong or weak. It's just all the same, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it seems like a theme has emerged in the last couple of weeks as we've talked. It sounds like you've taken a certain degree of interest and pride in your mixological qualifications.
That is what I was touching on once last episode, actually, that the irony of the fact that back in the day we didn't really take, when we got started with the Rocks project, we didn't really take the mixing of drinks very seriously. In fact, that was kind of the genius and yet the tragedy of the show. genius, because that allowed us to focus on everything else in the world, which was fantastic. But the tragedy, because we didn't fully exploit the interesting world of cocktails and mixology.
Yeah.
And since then, a lot of people assumed, because they would see the show and so forth, that we really knew a lot about mixed drinks and cocktails and these kind of things, when in fact it was really just a shtick. And you just kind of made it up as you went along, and most of the cocktails, once we got a few episodes under our belt, most of the cocktails you did were actually kind of made up nonce, I call them nonce cocktails, just on the spot, or performance art, if you will.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Right, but since then, I've really become interested, and when I say it's a tragedy that we didn't explore that world, you have to understand, of all of America's contributions to world culture,
mm-hmm.
the most important is the cocktail.
Wow. Now, that's a hefty assertion you've made there.
Yeah, but I think it bears up under scrutiny. So,
didn't we invent democracy, though, and Jesus and stuff?
No. Remember, democracy is like from ancient Greece.
Oh.
And Jesus was from ancient Jerusalem. Anyway, I'm veering from my point.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Since then, I've gradually accumulated somewhat of an interest
mm-hmm.
in mixed drinks and cocktails and so forth, and now I actually enjoy mixing up a serious cocktail on occasion.
Well, that's just supremely wonderful. I certainly enjoy mixing up a cocktail every once in a couple hours, but the thing for me has been that I've kind of fallen into what some might call a rut, which
Let
is to say
guess,
that
bourbon and Coke.
What's that?
Let me guess, bourbon and Coke.
No, I don't drink Coke anymore. I've moved on to Diet Coke.
Oh.
So yeah, I've brought some variety into the
less sugar,
the matter.
But all the caffeine, but less sugar.
Yeah. Mm. You know, there are occasional, kind of tangents that I'll move out on, but I seem to always come back to that. I think it must have something to do with bourbon sort of like coursing through my veins as a native Kentuckian.
Well,
of course, that doesn't explain the Coke or the Diet Coke.
Well, Coke is a southern phenomenon.
Right.
Kentucky is kind of Southern,
yeah.
Mid-South, as they say. But I think that just points out how things have changed from once upon a time when we were living together in Bloomington, Indiana, and making this TV show Rox and all that stuff. We weren't really into mixed drinks at the time. If anything, we were into beer, but also, smoking a lot of weed, taking a lot of psychedelic drugs, and just getting our freak on.
Yeah.
Things have changed a little bit.
Exactly.
In fact, it's
almost like we've gotten old and had kids or something.
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, one thing I think that you and I both heard from people when, our respective wives were pregnant, was people would say, your life is going to change forever.
Yeah, I heard that pretty much every day, it seemed like.
And how did that make you feel?
It really freaking pissed me off. Because especially toward the end, especially when the due date had come and gone, and I was still hearing it, it was like people almost seemed to think, aha, I've got a little bonus period during which I can still throw that line in there because it's still, he still hasn't experienced it. His life still hasn't changed forever. And meantime, I'm thinking, well, okay, I'm ready for it to change forever. In fact, it kind of changed forever a couple of months ago when we really, kind of found out that, we're having a baby and all this stuff and got to make plans and all of that. And, telling someone that their life is going to change forever is sort of, usually it seemed like it was meant in in kind of a good-natured, almost sort of letting you in on a secret kind of thing. And yet, you know, I couldn't help but resent it a little bit because it felt just the weeest bit like people telling me, oh, well, maybe you're going to have a baby, but you don't have one yet.
Yeah, well, you know, Jay, people, even people who mean well, just as a whole, people are kind of stupid, you know, and they don't really think about some of the things that they say. They just kind of, you know, they just kind of blurt them out. I think we all do this to some extent. Some of us are, you know, more thoughtful than others, or you know, but a lot of us are just acting from the gut, and so we say things like, "Hey, your life is going to change forever." When you know, that's obvious, right?
Right.
That's what got me about it, is that, I'm getting ready to have a kid. That's going to be a huge thing, and surely my life is going to change forever. So for someone to say to me, to look me in the face and sincerely say, you know your life is going to change forever, right? What kind of, you know, idiot do they think I am?
Yeah.
That they would have to tell me that.
Right.
You know that. You know your life is going to change, right? You know that. Well, of course I know that. What must you think of me to think that I'm just, you know, blindly procreating without having given it a thought? Well, a lot of people, of course, do that. So I guess you can excuse people for taking that approach. A lot of people do just kind of, you know, I mean, it's just what happens naturally.
Mm-hmm.
They reproduce without giving a lot of thought. But Christy and I were married for 15 years
right.
before having a child. So obviously it was kind of a volitional act. And we certainly knew it was going to change our lives.
Right.
And so, but, you know, I don't resent people saying that. I just found it a little off-putting.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think in a charitable sense, I came to be able to view it as, and especially sort of in retrospect as I look back, and when I encounter somebody who's about to have their first child, and I think back on how much that impulse irritated me, and yet what I do come to realize is that, you know, people, you know, in our lives we have these events that are supposed to be sort of watersheds or, you know, coming of age moments or whatnot. You know, you graduate from college and that's a huge thing and everybody sort of, you know, sends you pens and you have your family show up and you buy this ridiculous looking hat that you'll never wear again other than, you know, those 5 minutes while you're sitting there. Or, you know, you get married and you buy this ridiculous-looking outfit that you'll never wear again. You know, there's kind of a theme there with ridiculous outfits that you'll never wear again. But moreover, you know, those are events that we make a huge deal about in our culture that actually, you know, they change things for you. But usually they don't have, like, an instant sense of transformation. You know, like, usually by the time you graduate from college, you're sick of college and you've already got your job applications out and you kind of are working on the next step and kind of know where that's going to be. And, you know, just because you graduated, you don't have a new job. And after marriage, you know, if you've been in a serious relationship for a while with somebody that you care about a lot, it doesn't really change a lot about that relationship. It maybe just changes the way that other people view that relationship when they see a ring on your finger or whatever.
There's a lot of symbolism.
Exactly. But, you know, with a kid, it's like, you know, I remember still the moment when Dylan reached down between her legs and pulled Julian up to her chest. And, you know, it was like this instant moment of transformation that was actually truly real. So, you know, in that sense, I do think there's some validity to, you know, assuring people perhaps that this isn't just, you know, something that that'll pass, you know, kind of like you graduate from college, you know. This
yeah.
is something where you become a different person.
Yeah, but see, I didn't find it very assuring or reassuring. I guess the thing that really got me about that kind of comment, your life is going to change forever, is that it's kind of, to me, it kind of was scary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it made the prospect of fatherhood scarier than
right.
I think it should be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I was kind of like, you know, looking forward to this in a positive way, trying to stay positive. But, you know, I'm a little bit intimidated, you know, am I going to be able to do this and so forth? And people understand that fear, and they've experienced it themselves, and so they want to say, hey, you know, you're joining our club. Your life is going to change
yeah.
forever. You're going to be like me now,
right?
And all of that. But the way that it's said, like you know, your life is going to change in a way that, and you must not have realized this. You must not have thought about it. Just kind of struck fear. The sense of fear into my heart that I really didn't appreciate. And when a younger friend of mine is getting ready to have a child, I hope that I don't find those words uttering forth from my mouth.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think would be a better thing to say to people? Because, you know, it seems that this has become sort of a cultural meme, as it were, that gets repeated over and over and over again.
Exactly.
Until it almost loses meaning.
Well, and usually it's in somewhat casual
mm-hmm.
relationships and so forth. Well, I'm just, you know, if I only have a very casual level of acquaintance with somebody, I'm probably going to say, hey, congratulations, good luck with that.
Yeah.
Let me know if I can help, you know, or whatever. If you've got maybe a more intimate relationship with somebody, you know them a little bit better than that, you're closer friends, then you've got the time and the ability to say something that means a little bit more about, you know, share a little bit more of your own experiences and so forth. I thought one of the best things that anybody said to me before our daughter was born was, he said, you know, as she comes into your life and as she grows, try to see the world through her eyes.
Yeah.
And you'll find that it changes you. And I
yeah.
thought, wow, that's a great thing. That seems very wise. I hadn't really thought about that quite before, but it makes perfect sense to me. So I would hope, you know, if there's any little nuggets of wisdom like that one, to try to pass those along to people, because that gives you something to look forward to and hang on to. But, you know, that's just me.
What about something like, do you really think it's yours? Or hopefully it's human.
Yeah, I don't think so.
You don't think that the kind of built-in irony or whatever would be self-evident and kind of, you know, lighten the mood in the room, as it were?
Yeah.
Or maybe
yeah.
it would be a sore subject. I don't know.
It really could be.
Yeah. Yeah. I suppose that, you know, varying levels of confidence would breed varying responses to such a statement.
Well, in that regard, I don't know. I don't know what your experience has been, but my daughter looks so much like me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
people say
that
all the time. I mean, not about your daughter, but about my son, about me.
I have literally had strangers stop me on the street and say, oh, your daughter is so cute. No, she looks just like you. They've never seen me before or her in their entire lives.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they're remarking on the resemblance.
Yeah.
And so does everybody else. So you say your son looks like you.
Right, yeah.
Or so people tell you.
Yeah, but the irony is, that they also, you know, people say, oh, he's so cute, he's adorable, you know, but nobody ever says that to me about me.
Yeah,
and that kind of pisses me off.
I had a theory about that. I mean, the baby is cute. The baby looks like you, but you're not cute. So I forget what the theory was. I think this Manhattan must be having its desired effect.
Right.
That's why we have a nightcap, you know, to slow the brain down so that we can go to sleep.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, fortunately, there are differences between me and my son. You know, he poops in his pants and I don't.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean,
it's been a while.
There have been the, you know, occasional semi-annual, well, no, not that often. You know, the occasional little sort of mishaps. But
Well, I've heard that's coming, though. That's one. That's another kind of unfortunate meme that's been perpetrated upon us. Comics and comic writers and so forth seem to think it's the ultimate in edgy to observe that you know, there are such things as adult diapers.
Right. I mean, you pretty much only have to raise the specter of adult diapers. Or raise the subject anyway, not necessarily a specter, making light of them, and you've automatically become a comedian.
Yeah, and I guess that taps into a deep-seated fear that everybody has of, you know, growing old and aging. And so
I wonder
forth.
If people who manufacture those find them humorous.
They say there's no such thing as bad publicity.
Right.
But exactly. I'm not sure I'd want that. We have an unusual circumstance here. Christy is still awake. She looks like she's going to bed now, but she's been puttering around me this whole time as I've been talking to you.
Right.
And this is really not the way that I envisioned our nightcap conversation to go.
The adult diaper direction?
No, the Christy puttering around and still awake. She's supposed to be in bed.
Oh, right. Why is that? Do you put her to bed early?
No, I don't want her listening to our conversation here.
Oh, right. Yeah.
This is
at least until they're published on the World Wide Web for all the world to see.
She's going to listen to that. Come on.
Right.
She's way too busy to have time for this foolishness. But this is supposed to be, you know, an intimate thing between you and I.
Right.
And,
right.
And Christy is...
Well, if she wants to get on the phone, you know, I'd be glad to talk to her. But
No, she finally has toddled off to bed, it looks like.
Okay. Yeah, you ran her off with your merciless taunting.
Indeed.
Or something like that.
There was a couple things that I thought bore mentioning. You know, we had snowfall here in New Orleans for the first time that I've ever seen.
I heard that. That's crazy, man.
Yeah. Now, it did snow in 2004 on Christmas Day, but I missed that because I was in South Carolina.
Ah.
This is like a once-in-a-decade thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you, of course, live in a snowy area where it snows a lot. I grew up in such an area myself. So, of course, I was just, you know, kind of mildly disgusted by it's snowing. Yeah, it's just damp and cold and wet and nasty, but... At least it's not snowing. Oh, wait, it is.
Right.
It is. This is horrible. This sucks. But I've got to tell you, it's really heartwarming to see how New Orleans people, New Orleanians and Southerners, react to this snow. I mean, they were beside themselves.
Yeah.
People were running out and, you know, catching snowflakes on their tongue and making snowmen and so forth, and you know, this lasted for like 4 hours. It snowed for 4 hours, and there was actual accumulation of snow, which, you know, melted away that afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
It was fantastic. It's really actually hard to remain curmudgeonly under circumstances like that.
Yeah. Well, I would encourage such a response because, you know, living in a cold climate as I do. Here in Montana, there's really only one way to deal with the cold, and that is to face it head on with a smile and find things to do with it that are entertaining. You know, so that's why we have you know, ski mountains and ice fishing and all these things. Unfortunately, you know, I don't know if we've talked about this actually before, but when I moved out here, I was really seriously into a lot of the outdoor winter activities. And did things that you know, were perfectly comfortable and made sense to me at the time. You know, I remember that I used to do a lot of winter fly fishing, because actually fly fishing is really, if you can deal with the cold and the wet and the snow and all of that, it's a pretty successful time to fish, because the fish go to very predictable places and you can kind of just stand in one place and catch a lot of them oftentimes. And I remember that I developed over time this, you know, the outfit that I would wear fishing. I would actually wear shorts and then these knee-high neoprene wading socks and boots over those, and then like a fleece jacket over that. And, you know, I'd go out and it'd be 30 degrees and there'd be snow and ice all over the river. But I was somehow fine, because I was sort of kind of a human heater, as it were. And then I experienced this really strange thing that happened to me. One day I was up skiing on this mountain outside of town called Snowball. It's a commercial ski hill. And I was going up the lifts and was getting really cold, because the wind was whipping, and I was probably underdressed, as I usually was, and all of that. And I was really, really cold by the time I got to the top of the mountain. And I thought, well, I'll just start skiing down the hill and I'll warm myself up rather than stop at the warming hut at the top of the hill. And I started down the hill and I basically immediately fell and crashed and lost my skis. And so it was a pain in the ass to get all my stuff gathered up. And anyway, by the time I got down to the bottom of the hill, I couldn't feel my hands. And so I went into the lodge and sat there. And I remember this sitting there. And as my hands thawed out and I could start to move them again, because I pretty much had gotten to where I couldn't move them, I experienced this intense pain like I can't really describe, except to say that it really did feel like, I mean, it was this kind of crushing feeling of pressure, like somebody squeezing my hand in a vise and just cranking it down and cranking it down. And I was sitting in the corner, and I remember sitting there and trying to be tough and trying to not look like I was obviously in, you know, major pain, and yet, you know, I've got my hands between my legs just kind of like throbbing and hurting. And ever since then, I have a real problem with cold, and particularly cold and wet, to the extent that, you know, there's certain situations that I can't even get involved in anymore. I can't ice fish, for example, anymore, because as soon as my hands get cold and wet, I completely lose circulation in them, and they turn white, and I lose feeling in them.
Well, now, I remember you telling me about that. And did you ever determine whether it's I mean, it sounds like Raynaud's phenomenon.
Yeah, yeah. They call it Raynaud syndrome. It's something that, you know, often runs in families. I know my grandmother had it, but she only had it for a couple of years, and then it went away, as it often does. For me,
it has been... syndrome or a phenomenon?
What I've always seen is Raynaud's syndrome.
Huh. Hmm. Well, I think there might be two things there. But anyway, the point is that I knew about that. I didn't hear you before your story of how you kind of acquired that.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if that is a known, I mean, have any medical professionals expressed any interest in
Yeah,
your,
yeah.
Your
you know, they say that Raynaud's can be triggered by cold events or by frostbite. You know, I probably had some form of frostbite when that happened. And it's, you know, the Renault's, unfortunately, the thing that is particularly vexing to me about it is that the only thing that they can really say is that it, you know, it definitely has some psychosomatic component to it. You know, and it's basically an overreaction of the nervous system to cold, whereby, you know, if you start getting cold, your body reacts as if it's about to freeze and pulls heat away from the peripheral parts, the hands and feet, and toward the core, so that, you know, hopefully you don't freeze, it just sacrifices, you know, your hands and feet. Unfortunately, thinking about the fact that this might be psychosomatic does nothing for me.
Right, no, of course not. Psychosomatic can still kill you.
Yeah.
That's wild. I mean, you know,
yeah.
I, of course, have a deep-seated and very psychological fear of the cold.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not to that level, and for which I am eternally grateful.
Yeah.
And I have a body that just doesn't retain heat, and so I often have, you know, cold fingers, but they're not discolored and they're not painful, and it's not like that. But I have this like anxiety that comes about whenever I'm cold, and
yeah.
It is particularly ironic that now that I'm living in a subtropical climate, I actually often experience, you know, more being cold more often than ever, because I live in a house that does not have adequate insulation or heat.
Right.
And so in the cold months, I mean, it does get cold here. Occasionally it even freezes.
Mm-hmm.
That. And that can get quite chilly in the house.
Yeah.
And quite uncomfortable. But, well.
Well, you know, speaking of cause and effect and roots of these issues, you know, I remember probably 18 years ago now, you and I lived in the same town at the time in Bloomington, Indiana, and you lived down the street from me in an apartment complex with a former girlfriend who we'll just call, what, K?
MKM.
Yeah, MKM. And I remember distinctly having numerous conversations during the cold months with her about her clearly, you know, sort of over psychological reaction to the potential of being cold.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
I ask you this. Do you think you got that from her?
No, I don't think so.
Because you weren't that way.
Well, I don't know. I always thought that I kind of picked that up in Sweden. When I lived up in northern Sweden for a year, but that was even earlier. Maybe I just suffered in silence a little more.
Yeah, maybe so. Or maybe we were so drunk that we didn't notice how cold it was.
That's entirely possible.
Yeah.
But hey, speaking of drinking and so forth, I'm finished with my drinking.
Me too.
It seems like we've kind of run a little long here in this conversation.
Exactly. Do you have any punchlines that you can just kind of throw out there to sum up this random conversation about how cold I get? Because I don't think that was very interesting, really, even to me as I was saying it. So probably not to you or other people.
I found it absolutely fascinating. I hadn't heard that story before, and I think it's bizarre and intriguing.
Right on. Well, maybe there's some people listening to this who have Raynaud's syndrome, and if so, they can send gloves.
Perhaps. I guess I should also mention to you that I have set up a website for this podcast, nightcap.rocks.com.
Excellent.
At the ROX Rocks website. So that will be the official
home. How's NIGHT-CAP spelled?
Oh, you know, the real way, NIGHTCAP.
Oh, right on, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we could spell it differently. What do you think?
Well, you had asked me in an email, and as you've probably noticed, I'm not particularly good at responding to emails sometimes, or always, and I didn't answer you. So I think that it would be really radical of us to spell things correctly, because it's kind of been a running theme to intentionally misspell things at times. So, you know, we're kind of rebelling against our own rebellion at this point.
That is fantastic. The revolution within the revolution.
Exactly.
Well, on that note, then, I think we should say goodbye and until next time and all that.
Yeah. Au revoir and c'est la vie. And, you know, if you'd like me to sing the closing song from Lawrence Welk, I can.
I'm going to press this button before you can perpetrate that on us.
Okay.
Goodbye.
Bye.